from the campus of Stanford University.
Now, DNA contains the blueprints for how your cells live, how they grow, how they interact with other cells.
This is the future of everything.
Like a computer program, it allows the cell to perform simple computations to make decisions about when and where things happen.
With your host, Russ Altman.
Today on the future of everything, the future of mining. When we think of mining, we think of deep tunnels leading to valuable deposits of gold or coal or diamonds. We may also think of the search for other precious metals that shaped so much of the Western United States, California, and Alaska especially. But one of the main targets of mining today are the metals needed to create batteries: nickel, cobalt, lithium. With the increased emphasis on renewable energy sources, the problem in many ways becomes, how do we store energy that is episodic? The wind only blows sometimes, even in windy spots. Hydropower is probably much stronger in the spring during a big melt. And of course, for solar power, the sun is not up all day. So batteries become critically important. As consumers, we see them in our cell phones, in our computers, and increasingly in our cars. But we need methods for storing electricity, and we need better batteries and more of them. So we need a large amount of the basic ingredients required to make batteries. And that's where nickel, cobalt, lithium, and other elements come in. Where are the world's stores of these metals? And how can we efficiently find them, extract them in the most environmentally responsible manner, while also ensuring the safety and fair treatment of the miners who do all this work? Professor Jeff Cares is a professor of geological sciences at Stanford University and the director of the Earth Sciences Resource Forecasting. Jeff, how urgent is the need to find new sources of these metals?
Thanks, Russ. Yes, absolutely right. One of the things I want to emphasize on what you said is that basically to address this climate change problem, we need to go from basically burning liquids to moving to an economy that's based on solids, so materials. And so right now, the problem is that most of these minerals, particularly cobalt, is only found in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and about 60% of the world reserves and much of the world production is coming from there. As you know, Congo has a lot of issues. The mining that happens there is severe, poor human conditions, often artisanal mining by children, poor environmental regulations. And so this is a huge problem. What we're essentially looking at, Russ, is that we are creating a new resources curse. We're going from this big pool of oil in Saudi Arabia to this big pool of metals that are in this country. And that's a problem that needs to be addressed.
So there's a risk of having much of the history of the end of the 20th century repeated just in a new part of the world and with a new set of players.
Absolutely. We're also lacking still, if you think about, you know, I've made this small, simple calculation where imagine that every car in the world, right, about 1.5 billion cars, to turn them into Teslas. So let's say, you know, Elon Musk's pipe dream is being fulfilled. I calculated that's about, need about 6.5 million metric tons of cobalt just to charge those, to have those cars. Right now we have about the same amount discovered, but the problem of today is we're only producing about 150,000 metric tons. So we're way, way behind in this curve. And this is what you're mentioning, this urgency of doing this is today. It's not sort of a pipe dream in the future where we can say, oh, let's develop a much better battery without all these polluting metals. Essentially, we need to do this today because, you know, the tipping points in the climate are happening in the next two decades.
So I want to go back to something you said at the very beginning of your comments. You said we're moving from fluids to solids. Could you unpack that for me? What does that actually mean I want to explore that a little bit because I haven't heard it stated that way previously.
Right. So our problem often in sustainability is that of waste. What do we do with waste? We're producing all the waste. So right now we're taking these oil and gas and we're burning them. And so the waste we're creating is gases. So gases are stored. Basically, our atmosphere is a waste dump for the gases that we're producing. So, and one of the issues with that is gases are just difficult to capture. When people are talking about CO2 sequestration, but to do that, you have to go on this huge, huge, vast amount of infrastructure. So with mining, of course, mining is very polluting, but it's also very local. So there's a more ability to control. And the second thing is that we don't put any more liquids or gases into our cars. Now we have this battery that's there. I collaborate a company in Berkeley called Cobalt Metals, and Kurt House, the CEO, told me that, you know, even in California, if you would charge your battery produced with coal burning electricity, it would still be better than with natural gas electricity. So there is,
in terms of the waste product.
In terms of the waste product and being generated.
I think people would find that is surprising.
It is very surprising, yeah.
So I want to go back a little bit to these metals. So you might need to give us a little a metallurgy 101.
Right. What,
I mentioned in my introduction, mostly because I read some of your papers and watched some of your talks, that nickel, cobalt, and lithium are their major players. And I think everybody recognizes lithium and to some extent nickel batteries. Can you just tell us what's special about these metals and what is the status of the... You said, I think, that there's probably enough cobalt around, but it's in the ground still, and it hasn't been extracted. So give us a little bit of a 101 tutorial about these metals and their roles in these batteries.
Right. So the most popular rechargeable battery today is the lithium ion battery. And so to have a battery, as you know, you need an anode and a cathode and an electrolyte.
Plus and minus.
Right. So the anode is easy. That's just stuff that sits in your pencil. It's called graphite. The cathode, you're looking at creating or using essentially metals that create batteries that have a high energy density. That is really the key. You want density and you want power. And those things are, it's like a bathtub, right? You fill up your bathtub, there's a lot of energy and you drain it. If you drain it fast, there's a lot of power. So cobalt is just that particular sweet spot on metals that creates that energy density and also has the safety issue. Because you may have heard about planes, you know, having lithium batteries that catch fire. And so you don't want that. You don't want your Tesla car to catch, be on fire. So cobalt has these innate properties that are there. So cobalt, of course, is not found in a natural form. And it's in elemental form. It's found in minerals, you know, cobaltite and lineite. And there's all these kind of minerals that are around and there are these particular types of deposits. Because it's a metal, the metallurgy, as you say, it's very important. The formation of these is very specific. You know, you don't find just in a sandstone or just a basalt, you don't find it. It has to be concentrated in the earth. And there are some very complex processes that are going on. And
so this basically resulted from the formation of the earth, you know, a couple of billion years ago.
Well, yeah. So it's often associated with magmas, magmatic sulfides, for example, they're found in Canada, where these fluids that are concentrated in the metals coming up and they then get deposited at the surface. Yeah. So this has been going on for much of geological history. These are processes that are keep going on, but of course they go on just like oil production at a very vast millions of years of time scale.
Okay, great. And so are we moving from lithium batteries to cobalt batteries, or is it more complicated than that?
No, it's the lithium will be that main metal because it's a light metal, so that's why. But the cobalt is the associated elements that creates the safety and the energy density.
So you're mixing in the cobalt inside.
Right, yeah.
Would my typical battery in my laptop or cell phone have cobalt in it today, or is that an emerging?
It has. So your cell phone will have cobalt, but it's not an essential important element in the sense of the cost performance issue, because your phone is very expensive. So that small amount of cobalt is not going to matter, but it's going to matter a great deal in electrical vehicles, of course, where you need a whole lot more energy. And so the cobalt amount is about 4.5 kilograms into a Tesla that you find. So these amounts, and then also your home charging stations, you know, they're going to have all that cobalt needed for that.
This is the future of everything. I'm Russ Altman. I'm speaking with Jeff Kerrs about batteries, metals, and mining. Okay, so we know that there are these geological processes that are forming, especially cobalt, which seems like it's a stressful metal to find these days. And you made a reference in your comments that that there are spots in Africa, and in fact, perhaps not the most stable governmental situations, where a lot of this cobalt is found. And I know that you've done a lot of research in methods for identifying potential locations where you could then dig and look for. So what is the outlook in terms of discovering new sources or stabilizing existing sources that have been recognized already?
So the project and the ideas that I'm working on, also again, together with this company, Cobalt Metals, is really to find these battery metals in countries with stable regimes and environmental regulations, work regulations. And so that's going to be very important. This is a huge challenge because half of the reserves are in the Congo. So we're lacking a lot of in countries where we need regulations, where we have regulations. The problem we have today in mineral exploration is it's an extremely slow process. This is very expert driven. You know, geologists go look at rocks and analyze it, and you know, they have their fun outdoors. I'm the indoor geologist. I just do the software modeling.
You don't get to do the field work. I don't get to do these exotic places.
Yeah, I just go camping in the desert on my own, on vacation. So here's the thing, Russ. The discovery rate right now is almost zero. We have, if you look at the history of copper deposits, cobalt is often associated with copper.
Okay.
I've been about 200 something major deposits found. About 15 have been found, I think, in the last 10 years, and only one has been found in the last year. And the reason for that is that all the major easy things to discover, they have been discovered. So now we need to go look subsurface, means under a cover of sediment where you have no idea, you're standing on that on the ground. Let's say you're standing in Death Valley and you want to know what's under your feet. And so we need technology that is much faster than this expert-driven kind of geology-driven or geologist-driven expert exploration to more data-driven and also AI-driven type of exploration.
Right. So a lot of those, what you were referring to as easy discoveries, the humans discovered patterns. They were probably pretty good at noticing patterns of the types of geographies and the types of, and so they were able to capture those. But now if you go to a whole new regime of types of deposits, all of their experience is, without being disrespectful, irrelevant to these new potential sources. So how does data science and AI help you?
Yeah, so I mean, that expertise is still very relevant, right?
Good, it's
understanding
good.
The data you're getting. I see it as a playing chess with nature, right? It's one move, it's not one move at a time. What you're gonna have to do is use geophysical techniques like remote sensing techniques, but they go underground and there are many types. Things that look for magnetic anomalies or density anomalies, gravity anomalies, et cetera.
Little signatures that the metal might send you after the probe.
But we're looking at the area at the scale of Ontario, Canada.
Oh.
So it's not like, let's go fly a plane over Canada and we'll find them. This is like essentially a set of sequential decisions you're gonna have to make. You want to go there, and if you didn't that, what would you do next? And what would you do next? So what I'm working on is basically the same AI as DeepMind is trying to use to play chess against something. But our chess is much more difficult because it's very uncertain where the pieces are, so to speak, of nature. Nature is laughing at us right now and saying, I'm holding my secrets. But what are the moves we need to make? And what are the data acquisitions that we need to take? And what are optimized data acquisition we need to take in order to have major discoveries?
I see. So your metric of success there is reducing the false leads. So I guess it's a loss if you say we should dig here, forgive my language, and you dig and you don't find any cobalt,
right,
and you would like to enrich so that for 100 tries, you get a much greater yield.
Exactly, yeah.
How is it going? And is this something that is done in industry or academia? I could imagine arguments on both sides. The industrialists, they have the ability to scale. I mean, you said it's the entire area of Ontario. That makes me think, okay, I'm not sure an academic can do that much. On the other hand, you have kind of access to the latest technologies in terms of AI. And so how do you do that balance?
That's a good question, Russ. And this is typical for a lot of the earth resources industries. The old industries, oil industry, mining industry, they typically have great expertise in geophysics, you know, geology, but they're lagging behind in the new technologies, data and AI in particular.
Yeah.
And I think you're raising a very important question, which is how do we do this now and how do you accelerate this, you know, sustainable energy future? I think the collaboration between companies, and the company I work at, Cobalt Metals, is a really visionary company. It's a company that does not only do the data engineering, the machine learning, the AI, but it's also a company that goes and actually does the drilling. So they're facing their own uncertainty models and decision.
And they also pay for it if it's a bad guess.
Right, exactly.
They're footing the bill.
They're footing their own bill. The biggest challenge for us in mineral exploration is what you called false positives, right? This is the bias in the data that if you just do machine learning, you run into a huge problem. Why? Because people have gone in areas where they looked for metals. So you have a lot of positives, but you don't have any negatives.
Right.
So
right.
You don't find the negatives and you have this imbalance. And the biggest problem that the mineral industry has in exploration is the false positive. As you said, you know, you go somewhere and there's just nothing there. And that is where AI comes in, is to reduce this amount of false positives by leveraging data and machine learning. And so the problem is today, Russ, also is who does that? As you said, is academia
right.
doing that?
Right. I was wondering how you split.
Doing that?
Yes.
It's really the synergy that we need. If you want to accelerate this kind of sustainable energy, I feel it's the synergy that we have between companies and academia where the latest, newest thing is happening. But companies also have 10 data engineers that can, you know, engineer the problem. If I'm a PI, I can just hire 10 students and, right. you know, right. make nice data sets. So that's where this synergy is really needed.
So for this collaboration with this particular company, how has the labor been divided? What are the things your team in academia is focusing on? And what is the company focusing on?
So the company is really focusing on upscaling the things that are done in academia onto a continent scale. Right, where you're leveraging cloud computing, you're leveraging data engineering methods in order to make this just happen at this scale. Because as I said, they're not just interested in making a software, they're interested in making an actual discovery and paying for it. An academic side, I've been looking for 20 years, been doing that for a long time, building up this all these ideas and techniques of statistics. I'm really more of an applied statistician. To say okay, but with the practice in mind, to come up with those techniques that are required to do so, and that's not just you do in 2 years either. That is right. Something that you do over a career.
No, that's very exciting, and it sounds like it takes advantages of both the strengths at the academia and pushing the new frontiers of algorithms and data science, and then they're able to scale it up. We're going to have more on the future of everything. I'm Russ Altman. More with Jeff Cares about mining. Lithium, cobalt, nickel, and how to build better batteries in the future. Next on Sirius XM.
The future of everything with Russ Altman
from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to The Future of Everything. I'm Russ Altman. I'm speaking with Jeff Cares about mining, geology, batteries. So in the end of the last section, we were talking about all these great challenges for using AI, company and academic collaboration. I wanted to ask you about this idea of energy independence. You've written about it, you've talked about it. What is energy independence and why should we care about it?
Yeah, I think it's a good question, Russ. And if you look at the United States, you know, in the United States, we like to talk about energy independence. I like to come back to this car example that I mentioned in the beginning about this 1.5 billion cars. So the United States has about 300 million cars, a little less than that. So if you look at, again, at this analogy where 4.5 kilograms of cobalt, just if you focus on cobalt in a car, that will mean about 1.25 million metric tons of cobalt. So I tell you today, we are mining production 500 metric tons.
Okay, way off.
Way is
like zero. It's essentially zero.
Zero. And we only have a known reserve of 38,000 metric tons.
Now, when you say we, this is the United States.
United States, yeah. Okay. So where there's a number of problems with that. Of course, Cuba, if you look at Cuba itself, it probably has probably something like twice or three times the US on its own. Of course, we talked about countries like Canada or as well, Morocco, Finland, Russia. So it's kind of, it exists in many areas. Another problem that—
Are you saying that Cuba has three times more cobalt reserves than the United States?
I'm gonna look at my numbers here. I think in production, it has about 10 times the United States.
Wow.
And it has about 10 times the number of reserves.
And this is basically just the luck of the draw about what's underneath Cuba.
It is also a matter of exploration. The United States has not invested, our government has not invested simply enough. I can tell you an example. If you look at the databases, because when you go into do this and you do data engineering, the databases in Canada are so much better than the databases in the United States when it comes to particularly these metals, right? There are, of course, great reports by the USGS, United States Geological Survey, but really to look at the next thing, which is go look for it and explore, drill, get more data, I believe we're way behind that with the relative to other countries.
So this is important. So am I right in then inferring that we have very low reserves right now, but we really haven't looked? So there might be good news underneath the ground?
There is. There are several areas in the United States, Arizona, even California. If you look at all the states out there, there are probably 25 states where there could be cobalt deposits. And so if we look better, if we start to understand better through geophysical imaging and surveying, at a resolution where you can start to discover it, because a deposit is not very big.
Right.
It's like a kilometer scale thing. It's not a 10 kilometer scale thing, but we're looking at the size of the United States. Again, we're looking at exploring vast areas. So that investment has to come if we want to go and mine our own cobalt. The second thing I want to talk about is the processing of the ore, right? As you know, just like rare earth elements, a lot of processing is done in China. I don't know necessarily about battery metals, but processing metals is a big industry. Metallurgy. And so that's another one of the pipeline that you need to start thinking about if you go into this battery energy economy.
So I am presuming that from your comments that we are not doing a lot of the basic processing here in the United States. And to you, that represents a risk because we become dependent on foreign sources for things that we rely on, like our cars and our cell phones. So very interestingly, you said that the database for Canada is very good and our database is not as good. So where will the will come? What needs to happen in the United States? And then, of course, are you making it happen?
There's movement in the Senate, particularly Murkowski, the Alaska senator. She's really pushing for us to really invest into this. I think the new administration with President-elect Biden is going to look at this, I think, very seriously. Also looking at, a science-based, climate change-based policies, they're going to quickly discover that that's going to also be one of the issues. Building of infrastructure is a big issue as well. We have to build new infrastructure. So it's this whole network of things that needs to happen. And that's going to be key for the future.
So I'm sure that some of the people thinking about this topic are worried about the process, especially the processing, as a potentially dirty activity. And what I mean by dirty is that it's a polluting activity. Yeah. So can you tell me about what are the challenges? How good is our processing capability? And how green is it, for the lack of a better term?
Right.
Or is this something we really need to worry about?
It's something we need to worry about. In metallurgy, of course, is some of these cobalt minerals, they contain arsenic, the arsenites and stuff like that. So the metal industry, of course, it's an issue, but it's a whole lot less of an issue than, say, burning natural gas to create energy. The second thing is that it creates a recycling economy. So it's a closed economy.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about this. So for those three metals, how much can we reclaim at the end of a battery life?
It's about 90%. So there's you can really create this closed loop economy where after time you have mined all the cobalt you need or all the metals you need and you just keep recycling them. Now the recycling processes are polluting, but they are also concentrated in these plants that we can start thinking about. Or capturing the gases and whatnot that are associated with that.
And that just becomes, like many other things, that becomes an imperative research program to make sure that we invent a future where this essentially becomes sustainable. So there's an initial harvesting from the ground, but I guess I hope I'm not being Pollyanna-ish, but once that initial harvest has occurred, if the technologies allow for the reprocessing of it, then it becomes much more sustainable.
Yeah, exactly. And this is what I mentioned in the beginning of going from liquids to solids,
right?
Solid waste is just a whole lot more easy to recycle than gases.
So now we have focused a lot on cobalt because, as I understand, it's a limiting agent for a lot of these batteries. But can you give us a summary of what's the status of our nickel and lithium reserves? Is that fine, no problem, or are there some challenges?
The problem with nickel is that it is often in low-grade deposits. Mm-hmm. And so you have to mine much more of it. The processing is much more expensive. So in order to keep the prices low, you need to still discover a lot of nickel deposits.
Do you know if nickel is still used to make nickels in the United States?
Oh, I don't know.
I have no idea.
That's a good question.
This is a stump the geologist. I'm sorry. Okay, so nickel, the reserves are there, but it takes a lot more work to extract from those reserves. What about lithium?
Lithium, I'm not so familiar with. I've been focusing a lot on the cobalt and nickel numbers. There are huge deposits, particularly in Bolivia. So Bolivia was also one of these countries that are becoming the Saudi Arabia of lithium.
Yes.
So again, discovering those deposits is going to be important as well. It's not just about the reserves. It's also about the geographic diversification of where you're finding things. You don't want to find everything in one country.
Right. For these countries that do have these reserves, they have a challenge of kind of nurturing it for the welfare of their people. But then there, of course, are great global pressures on them to distribute. And this is the Saudi Arabia challenge that you referred to. So is there good global cooperation in this area, or is it every country out for themselves currently?
It's much like that, you know, resources is always every country out for themselves. It's market driven. So it's capitalist driven. So it's not, you know, it's not a socialist system. So yeah, it's definitely every country for themselves. And I don't think we have people have analyzed this problem, but now we are facing this problem urgently in the next two decades. People, of course, are thinking about other types of batteries, and Stanford is doing a lot of work and research, great research in this area, but those technologies are at least 10 years away to become like really at the manufacturing scale, a global and distribution.
And this is the technology that we have in hand, so we need to make sure that there's at least a plan to continue that. Well, thank you for listening to The Future of Everything. I'm Russ Altman. If you missed any of this episode, listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app.
This has been The Future of Everything with Russ Altman on SiriusXM Business Radio.
If you missed any of it, listen on demand,
online, or with the SiriusXM app.